okay? Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Power. I give it to him.
The glory.
I give it to him.
Forever.
I give it to him.
In ever.
I give it to him.
The power.
I give it to him.
The glory.
I give it to him.
Forever.
I give it to him.
In ever.
I give it to him.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. This is The Bold and the Beautiful. We are here right now. We are getting ready to start our broadcast, and I'm Curtis Austin, and we are now on When Christians Speak Talk Radio. We air every second Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. Won't you just tune in? Welcome to When Christians Talk Radio, Bold and the Beautiful.
If it wasn't for God, I'd be weak. Ay. I wouldn't wake up from my sleep. Ay. I wouldn't have nothing to eat. Ay. I wouldn't be so unique. Ay. If it wasn't for God, I would lose it. Yep. I wouldn't live under a roof, and yep. I wouldn't be up in this booth, and yep. I wouldn't know He is the truth. And if it wasn't for God, I would have been bold. The enemy would have taken my soul. But now I rise up and I surprise them like the day that He rose. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be up in these foreign cars on the way to my shows. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't have nada. I wouldn't be cold. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't have clothes. No shoes to cover my toes. No hat to cover my head. If it wasn't for God, I would have been. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be counted out. My family down and out. I'm blessed, so without a doubt. Hey. Gotta make sure I shout it out. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Bold and Beautiful is a talk show designed to bring the Word of God to youth and young adults around the world and embolden them to live out loud for Jesus. Our vision is to see young people of the world rising up to take their rightful place as leaders and world changers.
I'm a young girl spitting that gospel. Last time I saw the God, He said, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
And they try to act like they never knew you. But the devil can't do nothing to you. Cause the
power.
I give it to Him. The glory.
I give it to Him.
Forever.
I give it to Him.
In ever.
I give it to Him.
The power.
I give it to Him.
The glory.
I give it to Him.
Forever.
I give it to Him.
In ever.
I give it to Him.
Hello, everybody. Here we are again on another not so sunny Saturday afternoon for another When Christians Speak Bold and Beautiful podcast. I have with me, well, to my left, I don't know what he's on your screen, but this is Trey Potter. He is coming to talk about, this is the Gen Z takeover. He made a slick comment about my last podcast being a millennial takeover. So we are giving him his space to speak on not only, of course, what he's doing in his own life, but of course, Gen Z's. We're going to get into it. So good afternoon, Trey, and welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mama J. Hope you're doing well and happy first day of October.
Happy first day of October. People, listen, don't judge. You see that I'm wearing something furry. Let's be clear. I was just showing Trey. Let me be transparent. I just threw this wig on, but for real, I'm still in my night clothes. Okay. I had a long night and I'm still in my night clothes. And as soon as I get off this podcast, I'm going to throw this wig off. I'm going to pull off these lashes and we're going to go back to being comfortable. Okay. But I'm cute for you guys because that's how I get down. Wait, what'd you say?
We're still trying to figure out if it's a llama or alpaca though.
We don't know. We don't know. Y'all vote. Y'all pick. I don't know. I don't know. So Gen Z takeover. So Trey, first because we're definitely going to hit this whole Gen Z thing, right? Because people got a lot to say, but let's talk about you real fast. So you are a recent college graduate, correct?
Mm-hmm. I graduated last year. It's already been a year, but from the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. Mm-hmm. Born in Seattle, but my life has just been a series of different addresses. So I've lived in New York, Pittsburgh, Florida for a time. And after college, I decided to move out to Washington, D.C. And yeah, here we are.
And here we are. What did you study?
I studied construction management in the School of Engineering. To be honest, engineers, but you know, I can still flex and say I got an engineering degree.
Absolutely.
Mathematics, like calculus and all that, and more just practical, like construction information. Ooh, got my cat behind me.
Oh, hello, cat.
My son, by the way, Nigel.
I love kitty cats. Hey, Nigel. Hey, boo. Oh, I had a cat growing up.
All right, go. Get your booty out.
And cats are, for me, have you, listen, this is about to diverge. Like, we're about to, now that I saw that you had a cat, like, this is a whole different conversation. Did you see the documentary on Netflix, Don't Fuck With Cats?
Not at all, no.
Oh, you should watch it. So it's basically how cat people help catch a killer, because the person who was a killer had first started by like torturing and killing cats and like posting videos online, and like the whole cat community was up in arms. And so like thousands of people were searching for who this was. And he ended up, I don't think he had killed at that point. He had first started off with animals and he killed a person. And then I think he actually, he might have filmed it online. I think he might have filmed killing someone. You don't see his face or anything, but basically how they took the clues and helped find a killer, because you don't F with cats.
But I did hear about that. And I think it's so fascinating how for a lot of like serial killers or murderers, they always start with like small animals, like whether it's a squirrel or a rat, and then it'll go to something more personable like a cat or a dog. Humans and things like that. It's a damn shame, but I'm also very much a cat person. I think cats are so much better than dogs. For me, it's like I like how cats don't treat you as a god. Like with dogs, they will treat you like you are
one. The sun and moon rises on you.
But with cats, it's like my cat isn't living with me. I'm living with my cat. Like,
correct. That's
a whole another entity.
Whole different life. Like, oh hey, you're home, all right. Okay. absolutely. Yeah, I am an animal person. I have only owned a cat, but I've also owned birds, hamsters, guinea pigs, frogs, snails,
all of it.
I love creatures. And then I'm also like, I'm always looking for creatures. So anytime I'm driving, I'm always looking for animals. I'm like, oh, there's a bald eagle. I'm always on the hunt for all of God's creatures because they're just amazing to me. Yeah.
I bird one day. I think that'd be cool. Yeah. Birds are hyper intelligent.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Now I'm going to bring back something that was before you were born. And I don't know. I feel like you have to pay for it to watch it right now. But there is a movie that Madonna starred in called Who's That Girl? I feel like it was the mid to late 80s, maybe early 90s, but I feel like it was the 80s. And in the film, which was filmed in New York, there was this super rich person who had like a menagerie in his mansion. So he had like this huge area that was looked like a rainforest and had all of the animals in it. I was like, I want to be that rich one day. I want to, like, she walks in and there's like, you know, a jaguar walking by, like, all right, girl, hey. And then there are birds flying. And I was like, I could so do that. Now, I don't like keeping animals caged up and I don't really believe in that, but I thought it was very cool. Very cool. Man,
if you want to go to a zoo like that, just go to a college campus, go inside of worms and you'll see everything you want. Damn, there's a thing.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I feel like, so for me personally, my freshman year of college, I lived in the biggest dorm on campus, which was called Daniels Hall. Mm-hmm. It was like 13 or 14 stories, like 700 or 800 people. Yeah. Wow. Huge. They were like co-ed fours. They were all like quadplexes, They could all house four people. Some of them were like solos and duos.
Yeah.
But it was a ton of people. To flex real quick, I got named president of the hall, just saying.
Oh, shucks. Okay.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But man, you would just see the craziest stuff, especially between like 11 p.m., 3 a.m., any given night.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about jaguars, but I mean, wait till you see like the business student who is just blacked out, like sitting, laying, or like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah, that's a zoo. That's a whole zoo. That's a lot of kids. How big was the school? Like how many?
So Cincinnati had, I think undergraduate is like 40,000. It's a pretty big school.
Wow, that's a lot. And you feel like swallowed up in that? You were like comfortable being like one of the many?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I'm mostly an extroverted person. So I get a lot of life out of just interacting with people. One thing that of is just those random conversations with people. And when you're on a campus, you know, you'll get those experiences all the time. And I think what I've come to appreciate about college, especially after graduating, is that is truly the only time in your life where you're surrounded by people your age. Like you've got 10,000 people your age within a mile radius. Like that, you do not get that at any right. other life. I enjoyed being a small fish in a big pond.
Okay. Yeah, when I went to college many moons ago, I went to a really small school. I was like, I don't think I'm a big school kid. I feel like I might have drowned in that kind of experience. But I love the fact that you thrived and that you knew yourself well enough to know like this is like I would be good in this kind of like situation. Mm-hmm. That's super important. So now we are fully in the like job market now. You got like a full-on job. Do you have a job in your field?
Yeah, I work as a project engineer for a general contractor. Basically, to paraphrase, if you see construction going on, I don't do the labor, but I manage it. So I handle a lot of the finances, coordination, schedule, ideal. I'm basically the owner's representative almost to the actual work being done. So a building gets designed by an architect and then an owner or whoever has the money wants to build a building. They hire an architect, the architect designs it. And then once they have the design out, the owner will or developer will push this drawing or set of plans out to the market and be like, hey, who can build this for the lowest price? And so then the general contractor where I am will bid the project like, hey, we think it'll cost this much. We think we can do it in this timeline. And then you get awarded the process. And then, yeah, that's where I come in and deal with creating a scope of work or the schedule, handle the finances, coordinations. We bring on the subcontractors to actually do the work. Hopefully that made sense.
No, I get it. So being in government, I get the whole contract, putting out a bid, yeah. and then the project manager in whatever field is the one who makes sure that it stays on schedule, it stays on budget, that you know you guys are meeting like your benchmarks and where you should be at certain points in the project. So yeah, that's yep. very cool. Do you really like the work?
I was about to say that. No. No. I do like it, but I'm not in love with it. And okay. The longer that I live, the more I realize I think it's truly just, I mean, I make good money, don't get me wrong, but I think it's just more important to do things that you're passionate about and that you love rather than things that you just like. Like when I go shopping, I never just buy a shirt that I like. I buy a shirt that I love, even if it's a little bit more expensive. If I know that I'm really into it, then hell yeah, I'm gonna get it. And I think it should be the same approach with people's jobs. However, just the way that the education system is set up in America, especially in regards to universities, I didn't go to school to learn how to create a general contracting business. I didn't go to school to learn how to be an entrepreneur per se. I went to school to learn how to be a worker.
Right.
Learn how to be a suburban. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like that's the case with most people's majors. You go to school to work for someone else. But for me, I eventually want to branch out and do my own thing, create my own financial flexibility. Generational wealth is always the goal. And I don't think that's, for me and my goals, I don't think it's attainable staying in this route my whole life. But to close the loop, the industry that I'm in and the work that I do teaches me a lot of skills that I know I'll be able to use further down my life. So
it's
a matter of, as you said earlier, balancing my impatientness and my ambition and kind of come to an equilibrium and, you know, have my goals set in place so that I know that I'm working towards something and that I'm not just working to work, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's what we do a lot, especially in America, is we work to work. I'm like, that's not good enough. I think that's why we're dying young. Like, so that's why we have stress issues, because we're working to work and it's really not working. So have you thought about what you are passionate about or what you would like to do? Like if there's anything, like close your eyes, dream your biggest dream. If you could find independence, you know, generational wealth, like you said, what would you be doing? What would that look like? Do you have an idea yet? You may not. You may.
So kind of, sort of, I think, and I'd love to hear your perspective on this, but I think for most, for 95% of people my age, I'm 24, I think that process of finding your passion is ongoing. Personally, I don't feel like I've found it, but there are things that I really do enjoy. I feel like in terms of creating generational wealth, for me, I just want to do a couple of things that will like create or generate like passive income, whether it's eventually I want to own some properties and do development, but then I also want to be able to sell like life insurance to my family and friends. And that's like another stream of revenue, or invest, make sure like my 401k is popping off. My Roth is like good, you know, have the life insurance, maybe even do a little bit of crypto. So to really diversify it, if I closed my eyes and dreamt, Trey, what could you be doing and you would be making money? I would absolutely love to be able to travel the world and really just help people. I don't know if it would be in terms of like public speaking, and I'm speaking on something I'm really passionate about, that would help others, but I think something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I feel like the wonderful thing about life is it'll help you flesh out and hone in what that kind of like looks like until it's congealed into something that like, oh, I could do this, right? I am super similar in that my whole life, I have been what I have called myself is a cheerleader. So I love to encourage people. Of course, spiritually, it's called an exhorter or exhortation, but it's the same thing. It's like, it's basically a cheerleader. So you love to see other people doing well and you love to encourage people who are doing well. So, thankfully right now, like the job that I have working for the government, I am helping people. So I feel like super fulfilled. Like I would do the work that I'm getting paid to do. I would do it for free, like, because that's how much I love the work. Mm-hmm. And I love the people group. I also believe, I think that's one thing that, if you, and it may look different for everybody, but like for me, I feel like I've identified my tribe, the tribe of people who I want to help. Because it could be like so, like that could be broad. Like, I just want to help humanity. That's a really, big, tall order, right? So my people group are people who have interacted with the criminal justice system in one way or the other. And so I love that people group because for me, someone who has not messed up in the same way, but who has messed up like again and again and again and again, you know, you could just keep making bad decisions, mistakes, whatever you want to call them. And you need, absolutely, I think everyone needs someone in their life who will not give up, who will be with them on the first time they make a bad decision and who will be with them on the 532nd time they messed up, right? Because everybody's journey is different and everyone's not going to like bounce back the same or like, oh, I made one bad decision, let me just turn my whole life around. That looks, you know, different for everybody. So I super really love working with people in that system because I get to be the person who sticks with them, like no matter what.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in that because, and me and my mom were talking about this and you alluded to it. It's not about, I want to help humanity. It is about it, but it is way too broad to say, I want to change the world. No. Change the world you live in and right. The ripple effects will be felt. So with the work that you do, you're affecting like, let's say you help 100 people in a year. I mean, that 100 people ripples out to like thousands of people a year.
Right.
You're inadvertently helping the world, but just in your way. And that's why I think for all people, regardless of age, like figuring out that passion, what it is, your purpose is so important because I'm good at math, but I'm not like really into math. But if I have a math teacher who is very passionate about math, mm-hmm. I get in listening and learning from them. If everyone did something they were very passionate about, gosh, I mean, I think the world would just be a lot more.
It would be a better place, period. Yeah. period. So I'm trying to figure out which street do I want to turn down? There's so many streets. There are so many streets. You know what? We're just going to branch down here. I don't know how far we're going to go down this street.
Let's do it.
You made your cute little comment about the millennial takeover. You wanted to talk about Gen Z, so let's talk about them.
Okay.
What do I feel like? Oh, I need to water my plants. Jesus, I'll do that after the podcast. What do you feel are the both positive and negative stereotypes of your generation?
Okay, so I guess to narrow it down a bit, I'll talk about like my generation specifically, which I think is 23, 24, 25, 26, maybe even 27. Right. The reason why I count it because Gen Z starts at 1995. I was born 97, but I was born, how can I explain it? I grew up going outside and having fun, but I feel like a lot of people in Gen Z now, like the younger side, they probably just stayed in on the video games or on their iPad, bunch of YouTube and things like that. I feel like that 95 to 1999, 2000 range is a bit more unique because we still had that childhood almost pre-internet. But when we got into middle school and high school, like we were really the first generation to have like Instagram, YouTube was really big, Snapchat. So to talk about that specifically, I think the best thing about our generation from what I've seen is we're really open-minded to a certain extent. It's kind of a double-edged sword, but I love how interconnected we are. And I love our ability to find and use information that is just out there. For example, I think we've seen in the last few years, we've seen like a real rise in things like meditation or things like yoga or whatever it might be. These are like very practices, but I feel like my generation does a good job at
making it blow up
and come back up. And also social media is kind of a cesspool depending on how you use it. But I love how my is so interconnected with people from around the world. I mean, on my Snapchat, I've got friends that I met in France. I got friends that I met in England. I got friends that I met in Colombia. And I love how they're just a tap away and I can contact them whenever. I can see what is going on in their lives. I think that makes people seem more like people. It makes it feel more like, okay, they're just people. They're not, just because they're Russian doesn't mean they're bad. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Let's not put people in groups based on what their government does or where they might live or whatever. The worst thing, it's a long list. I guess two things really come to mind. First off is the social media thing. I think it's our generation and a bit more on the younger side, but I think our generation gets swayed a lot by social media. I think about my sister a lot as a young woman, you know, she's 14. A lot of girls her age will get a false sense of confidence based on virtual numbers on a screen. I think that my generation can put too much emphasis on, it's like they care more about their username than their last name. And that's not real. That's a fake world.
Right.
I feel like in that aspect, I dislike it, but I really do have hope that my generation will also be the ones to really disconnect from that and go back to reality per se. The other thing that I really get frustrated with is, how do I describe it? Something along the lines of like just being polarizing. Or my previous comment about how we're really open-minded, but it's a double-edged sword. Like we sometimes are a bit too progressive in some senses. Which like, let's like pause the brakes. Like, let's not listen to everything that we get exposed to. Like, it's good to live gray, but sometimes I think personally, it's good to live black and white.
Yeah, everything isn't valid. Just because someone said it doesn't make it valid. One of the things that I think And the funny thing is, what I have come to realize raising a Gen Z is a lot of what annoys me about my own child are things that are my fault. As, hey, boo, that are my fault. This is what I love about cats. They do not care. Zero. Zero. Care zero. So one of the things that I realized is that, like, the things that annoy me about my child is because of the way I raised her, right? So I raised, like, and I grew up in New York City, in Manhattan in, like, the 80s. And at a very young age, I was maybe 8-9 years old. I was, you know, walking the streets of Manhattan 7 o'clock in the morning to take a bus across town, like a city bus across town. So I was managing my own time to get to school on time, to make sure I didn't get off on the wrong bus stop. So those are things that I did that I absolutely, like, it would never have let Hannah do it. Like, are you kidding me? Letting her get on a bus by herself at 8? Never. Excuse me. And excuse me. So some of the things that annoy me are, it's my fault. Like, I should have let her get on the bus at 8 or 9, because there is a certain level of, like, independence and critical thinking that you get. But we don't, my generation, I feel like Gen X's, didn't recognize that some of the what we call struggles for ourselves as children growing up were really character building, and they really built, like, skills that we use to this day. And I'll never forget, Hannah's gonna kill me for telling this story. It's, like, not really a terrible story. But basically, senior year of high school, we had moved to a new county. So she had to figure out, like, you know, where the bus is gonna pick up, you know, the high school kids, you know, to go to school. And so she called this phone number, and she had the most confused look on her face. And so she just hands me the phone, and I was just like, what is wrong? And it was a busy signal. And she was 17 years old and had never heard a busy signal before. Oh. And it just kind of crystallized for me in that moment that I had been making all of her phone calls. So she would never have had the opportunity to hear a busy signal, because I handled everything. Like, so at 17, she was coming up against, you know, some kind of, like, conflict or adversity that she had never yet, you know, experienced. But she could have, had I let her do things earlier. Like, even when I think about, like, probably the first time I let her, like, walk to, like, a corner store or, like, a store in our neighborhood with a friend, she was, like, 14 years old. Like, I would never, like, let her go to the park by herself. You know, I grew up in the age definitely of, you know, we can look up and see where, you know, sex offenders are in your neighborhood, you know. So there were just things that I just did not allow her to do. But I'm like, okay, that might have a reason to why there are things that I'm like, why aren't you thinking about this? I'm like, oh, because I thought about it. And then I told you what to do. And so now you're at a point where I'm just like, well, I probably should let you do that thinking earlier.
You bring up a really good point. So much, and this is not a generational thing. I think this is just people in their 20s thing. Got that alkaline water. Love that. Mm-hmm. My mom spends so much money getting those damn. Yeah. But I think people in their 20s, your 20s, a lot of it is about unlearning the bad habits or things that you got from your parents that necessarily weren't right. One thing that does frustrate me about my generation, Gen Z, which you kind of alluded to, is that we're really not soft, but pampered. It's like we have a general inability to see adversity, recognize that it is adversity, and be able to push through that adversity. And I feel like a lot of that is the older generation wanting the best for us, but not necessarily teaching us in a way, teaching us character building skills without having us pampered. For example, I feel like a lot of guys in your generation or older know how to, like, fix cars and things like that. I mean, I know how to change my oil. I can, like, change my brakes. I can change a flat tire. But a lot of that stuff does not get passed down to guys our age, because if anything, we have an app where we can just send our car to the detailer or to the mechanic, and they can do it. Or gosh, I feel like there's so many examples of things coming in our generation, and that, and living in that like comfortability, luxury, kind of just in turn makes us like not want to work, makes us a bit soft. Yeah, hopefully I'm making sense.
No, I totally get it. Listen, and my my husband, who was like in retail management for, you know, 30 plus years. So he used to always talk about, because he saw generations of kids coming into the workforce. And so he would see like generational things. And I definitely believe that, like, you know, definitely Gen Xers. So like me and all of my sisters who all have children, from my, I think my niece is 31, 32, to my youngest siblings, I mean, nephews and nieces, who's, I think she's 18 now. We can definitely see how we wanted so much for our kids that we just did like everything for them. So then once that happens, they're like, what do I do? Like, you always fix my stuff. So now you want me to fix my stuff? Mm-hmm. You've been fixing my stuff my whole life, right? So why are you asking me to fix it now?
And I feel like for you, and I kind of understand your perspective, because I mean, you had Hannah like relatively young, right?
I did. I was 22.
22. Like my mom had me at 17. So it's kind of that same boat where it's like, they want the best for you because of what they saw, that they're a bit, that they can be a bit overbearing, which is why I had to move out at 18 and like really get that space. But I think what we have to watch out for, and what I hope I don't fall into when I'm older, is being like, oh, this generation, nah, nah, nah. Like you're right. Grew up in the 1920s. You'd be like, I mean, by the time I was 15, I had two kids working, and you know what I mean? So it's generation is going to be different based on what the norms are of that society. So I think the best thing that the older generation, our generation, future generations can do, and this is so cliche to say, but I've thought about it a lot, is really just try to obviously understand and just reciprocate everything in a place of love. Which I know is like super cheesy, but it's like,
but it's real.
If you come from a place of love and understanding, it's like you'll be able to get why this generation might think like that. And let's not be like, man, you guys should like, no, let's get into a teaching mode and teach this generation what the steps are to do. Now, I mean, you have a young daughter, and my mom has me, so it's like we're a bit hard-headed sometimes, but I think that's how we can improve the situation per se. It's just support.
Yeah. So one of the things that I so one of the reasons why this podcast was created, even though I don't have my co-host with me today, is we were all youth leaders. So nice. I think my secondary tribe are children. I have always loved kids since I was a kid. So I offline, we had a brief conversation about how like I've been babysitting since I was like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. I was like babysitting like multiple kids. Like I would have like 4 to 6 kids that I would watch for, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a day. So I have been so used to my whole life taking care of people. So I've always loved kids. And I, when I say I parent the world, like I truly mean that. There were times, of course, pre-pandemic, when I was like taking the metro into work, I was riding the train. And if I saw a kid doing something, I'd be like, excuse me, young man, like I parent the world and I don't care. I think the wonderful thing, the reason why I haven't gotten like assaulted at some point, is because I do lead with love. You know, like you were saying, is I come from a parent's heart. So I'm never doing anything or saying anything to a young person to judge them. I am doing it because I feel like whatever it is unsafe or not good or something. So from a place of love, I say, I'm gonna need you to tighten that up, right? Like I remember one time, this one kid, and he was so skinny. I was like, you cannot be a criminal. He was running up the escalator and stole an iPhone out of this woman's hand, who was just like on her phone. He stole it and tried to run. And I just grabbed him, and he was so skinny and he was like struggling. I was like, listen, if I can stop you, like you don't even understand what it's going to be like if you actually end up in jail. I was like, so we got her the phone back. Right. And I was like, I'm going to need you to go do something else, because a criminal lifestyle is not for you. They are going to break you apart in jail. Listen, I go to jails. I know what this is like. Like you need to do something else.
Wait, both. I have a problem.
right? Like, you can't, if I can grab you up like this, can you imagine what's going to happen to you in like a cell with a celly? Not good, not good. So I definitely hate the world.
I like that you responsibility, but at the same time, I wish that, and I feel like this is a very much Western society thing where it's so much about the individual and less about the collective. For example, in China, they do things, while I don't agree with a lot of things they do, one thing that I do, when they implement something for the society, it happens. Whether it's here in America, one of the most watched shows for years was like, I think NCIS, you know, like those murder mysteries and things like that. China, it's like educational programs. The point that I'm getting at is I feel like in America, it's looked down upon or frowned upon to raise a child as a community, and it's solely on the parent. But I like how in other countries, in a more traditional background, it's no, we raise our kids as a community. Like, we're all trying to help, kind of like you were saying. I think that's something that could really help in the future. I feel like that should fall on the responsibility of not the government, but I guess for our case, churches.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the highest per capita of churches in the world, yet we suffer from like poverty and drug overdose and all this stuff. And it kills me when I see these church groups going out as a Christian, going out and being like, yeah, we're going to go to Africa and we're going to help all these, like well, don't go out here. Your inner city and help these people. Like, you don't have to travel across the world to like help others. Like, you can help your community now. I wish there was a bigger emphasis in America on that, raising the kid as a community and right. less focusing on the parent or individual.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely believe that was something that was a value of the Black community, you know, pre Jim Crow, pre, you know, desegregation. I think there was a definitely, like, if you talk to older generation, like your grandmother, your grandma's grandmother, you talk to those people, they're like, listen, everybody in the neighborhood knew whose child I was, and they also felt very willing to both love on you and correct you, right? Like, you could go to someone's house and get food as well as go to someone's house and get beat up because you was acting up in the streets and they saw you. So there was definitely that sense. And I have an affinity for my own people group, which is, you know, African-American or Black Americans, but as a human race, right, we don't, you made the point about like even sometimes your generation can be polarizing, but I feel like we're at a point now where like all generations are super polarizing. Yeah. Like, we are in a place where we're looking for reasons to be separate, and you're different from me and I'm over here and you're over there, as opposed to how are we alike and how are some of our values aligned, which is, you know, super sad, because, you know, I love people. And so it always hurts me when we find ways to like exclude people from things, exclude them from conversations, exclude them from, you know, rights and freedoms, you know what I mean? So that's one of the things that I love about your generation is when you said you're open-minded, I do believe that. I believe that your generation is super like welcoming, and they're like, oh, come, you can sit at our table. Like, we accept everybody. And I think that is one of the best things, because there are so many people who feel on the outside and who feel like, you know, they're weird or different than. So the fact that your generation is one who will welcome anybody, I think is just such a treasure. It's so funny, even when I think about, because so for y'all listening audience who don't know, me and Trey met on the dance floor. That's correct, because we'd be out in these streets doing salsa. So this young man be out here, you know, doing turns and stuff, you know what I'm saying? One of the things, I was taking a class on George Mason University's campus.
I've been going to that recently, matter of fact.
So yeah, so they just had their second session. I haven't started going to the second session yet, but of course, that is all mostly Gen Zs. There are some people who are older like me, but there are a lot of Gen Zs who take those classes. And one of the things that I love, like looking at the makeup of the class, which is not something that was typical for like my generation or older generations, is you will have a lot of females who are leading and a lot of males who are followers. And I was like, you know, that is I think my generation may be the last generation who kind of, this is the way it's supposed to be. This is what the value is. And if you're outside of this, then something is wrong with you, right? And so I love the fact that I can go into a class with young people and they're like, we don't have gender norms. We don't have, it is whatever you feel comfortable doing, that's how we're going to show up. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Oh, that's my mother calling me. Hold on, let me tell her I'm doing a podcast right now. Pat Randall, I'm filming a podcast right now, so I'm gonna get off the phone. Yes, I'm recording and filming you. You're not on camera, don't worry about it, but I love you and I will call you back. Bye. So I love that about your generation. I love that you all don't stand on what was done before. Like, I think my generation was the last to say, well, my parents did it like this, so we're gonna do it like this. And your generation is like, we don't want to do it like none of y'all. We're gonna do it like we do it, and you yeah. like it, but that's how we're gonna do it.
So I want to hit on that point, and then I want to hit on the polarization point. But with this in particular, so I feel like just growing up in Ohio and just the background that I'm from and the way I think, I feel like I'm a bit more on the conservative side. So I don't necessarily agree with like some aspects about the whole gender thing, but what I can appreciate is, and I feel like what you're getting at is that my generation just, and excuse my French, just does not give a fuck. Like,
right.
Do what you want, like.
Zero.
It's like, I feel like we're just a bit more inclusive. And I feel like that is due to the fact that we just get exposed to more things. It's very hard to be racist to a person if you sit next to them in class all the time. And I feel like my generation has had the privilege of, you know, going to school. And a lot of times, regardless of where you are in the country, it's pretty diverse. And then on top of that, with social media, I mean, you're just following people, you know what I mean? People that you see, you're seeing all different races, whatever, gender, ethnicities, religions, like you're seeing all of that. So it's not like when a person walks into a room and they want to do this certain thing, it's like, oh, I haven't seen this before. It's like, no, I've seen this on social media. I've seen this in person. I've seen this just out and about. So I do love how, and that's a good point. I really do enjoy how like inclusive we are, just more accepting of people. And with the polarization thing. So I think I'm going to hit you with a stat here. Off the top of my head, I don't know like the publication that came out with this, but on average, Gen Z actually uses Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, YouTube, Twitter less than millennials and Gen X on average. The app that they use more, which I personally don't use, is TikTok. So TikTok is like really used in my generation, but all the other ones are less. And when I heard that stat, I was like, you know what? That gives me so much hope, because I really do feel like when my generation is at the age to hold high positions of power, I think we're really going to see a reversal of just this entertainment cesspool that we've kind of got down in. I think my generation is going to be the one to really separate ourselves from the matrix per se, and not be so caught up in the fake world of like social media.
Yeah.
A lot of good from social media, but I think the way that the people in power are setting up these algorithms is set up in a way to cause polarization.
Absolutely.
And I think when my generation gets there, we can put a stop to this, because we've experienced it. I mean, we've literally grown up and see how detrimental it is.
Right.
But I feel like for millennials, older millennials and Gen X, you guys lived a whole life and then saw this, but it's like, yeah, we lived in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
it was there from the beginning for you all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny when you just think about the things that you guys have never like had to use, like, you know, like a phone that dialed like this, like what, I don't understand. Or, you know, it's so funny. Now I remember when my Hannah was younger, I bought her like a a retro Polaroid camera, but I was like, I remember when the original Polaroid camera was out, you know, these things, when we had to go and take our film into a store for them to develop our film. You know, we didn't just take pictures because we didn't have smartphones and we didn't have clouds to store stuff on.
My sister has never seen or probably does not know what a BlackBerry is, you know, or a D or a CD, you know. I was on the end of like LimeWire, you know, when you would burn. No, I don't got to do that no more. Are you kidding me?
Let me just tell you how I hated to give away my BlackBerry. Like it was one of my earliest work phones. Mm-hmm. And when they had tried to get to go to like a smarter smartphone, I was like, but why? BlackBerry is perfect. Like, why would you do this? Like, I bought a BlackBerry for my personal phone because I loved the BlackBerry for my job. And I was like, why? That means I have to like upgrade technologies. I don't understand why. Oh my goodness. So you moved out at 18. Let's get into that. Like, what?
So move out is, I feel like I said it in a kind of a loose term. I just left the college at that time. But once I left, I remember the first day. I won't get into what happened the summer before, which might have like caused some of this. But I remember on the first,
just drop that little Easter egg and not be like, but I'm not gonna tell you what it was, but it was something.
Easter egg for future episode. We'll say that.
Okay.
First day of college. I was living in Columbus, Ohio, where Ohio State is, but I was going to go to school in Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati, go Bearcats. So me and my mom drive 2 hours down. I remember we pull up to the residential hall. There's hundreds of kids there. I had to go inside the building and get my key for my room. I go in there. My mom says, hey, I'm going to push your stuff on the sidewalk just to help you get ready. I get my key. I come back out. All of my belongings are on the sidewalk and she's gone. And I'll never forget, from that point on, I feel like it was, all right, you're on your own, kid. I didn't have a phone at the time. Like, I did not have a phone. I had an iPod. So, like, if I was trying to get a girl's number, like, I'd be like, yeah, hit me at glinesoccer12@yahoo.com. Like, I couldn't get a number. And so I feel like from that point, I kind of say I moved out because, I mean, it's not like I was going back home for Thanksgiving or any of that. I was just kind of out there. You know, I really had to kind of just adult, whether it's like, okay, let me get some car insurance. Let me get a phone bill. Let me do this. Let me do that. Da, da, da. Like, what am I going to eat this week? I got $50 in my account. How can I make this last? Do I have enough to buy a gram of weed? Like, you know what I mean?
So, you didn't go home for the holidays?
That first year? No, no.
So what did you do? Where did you go?
I was just in the dorm. There was like, it is so eerie to be in a building that's meant for 800 people and there's like five, but ooh. I just stayed. Yeah.
Interesting. How did that feel?
I think at the time, of course, I was like hurt to a certain extent, but shoot, I am perfect. I definitely did some things that probably hurt my parents too. But I think I would not change anything because that stuff had to happen in order for like me and my mom to have a great relationship now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those learning curves. It did suck, but I feel like at that point in my life, I was just like, man, this is the cards I kind of got dealt and we're just going to deal with it. And I feel like it really made me so much more independent now to where, like when I was 20, I moved down to Miami for like an internship for 5 months. I feel like I was so much ahead of the curve compared to people my age, even now.
Mm-hmm.
Where I already knew what it was like to move to a whole different state, whole different culture. Everything just felt different other than the language and just kind of like thrive out there, you know?
Did you salsa in Miami? Were we salsaing at this point?
So I had went to like some classes for a couple months. But I did not know what I was doing, but it was like my first experience with Latin music. And I love Latin music. So really good experience. That's also where I realized I had a passion for Latin women. So
hello. We're talking about women. Do we have women? Are we just like out on the dating scene? What is dating like? Are you like meeting people in person? What do you do? Yeah.
So I think that's a great question. So I think for me personally, and I'll be honest, I'm a hypocrite to a certain extent. My stepdad met his fiance via like match.com. So I'm not gonna sit here and say dating apps don't work. But I think the dating culture in regards to apps for my generation is more or less hookup culture. I feel like I'm just a bit more traditional in the sense where I think it's much better. And I have a lot more fun just meeting women when I go out and just chatting to them there rather than just texting for like a week and then maybe a FaceTime. And it's like, hey, like, let's meet up. That's just me personally. I'm not a big texter. So like, I don't like to do that stuff. But I feel like for my generation in the dating apps, it is definitely more of a hookup culture. Like, I'll be totally honest. I probably got like 5 bodies just from like, you know, chat with a girl on Tinder. Hey, let's meet up. Get her done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is fun. I mean, it's like temporary satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
Yeah, temporary satisfaction. But I don't think that's like the way people should live their life. But I feel like the dating scene is relatively like the same for my generation and your generation. Like a lot of people from my age group, if they got married to someone, they probably met them in college or met them in high school.
Right.
And I'm going out. I know there are like successful relationships from dating apps, but I don't really see it too often.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. One of my close friends, she met a really good guy from a dating app. And I was like, okay, well, there is hope for some people. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad because I'm not like super into technology. So that the whole thing of trying to like find a life partner starting on some form of technology would have been more than my little mind could take. So I'm so glad I'm out of the dating field right now. Like, more power to you all. It's so funny because a lot of the people that I go dancing with, they're all single. And I'm like, why weren't you guys in my life like 3-4 years ago? Like, there was a time, especially again, pre-pandemic, going out in the workforce, I was like, I know a lot of good guys, but now I have not been in contact with them for several years. And so now y'all out here single and I can't connect you to these guys I haven't talked to in a couple of years. So
continue.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say what I do like about, this is just a random thought, but dating apps now is that there's more emphasis on the woman reaching out first. Like the woman has a bit more power, which I personally love. I mean, I'm a shy guy. Like if I'm around like a pretty girl, so it's like if she shoots her shot, love that. If I'm like, oh my god, you're so cute, like that, I don't know, get a little nervous. Mm-hmm. I love that women are being more empowered now to just like take action and shoot their shot. You know what I mean?
I do. What's the best date you've ever had?
Best date I've ever had. The ones that end in my bed.
That's such a dude answer.
I know, that's terrible. But off the top of my head, I can't really think of one. But the last date I went on, it was like super last minute. So we ended up just going to the mall, super basic. But I'm the type of person where it's like, if I go on a date with you, I want you to remember it. Whether it was good or bad. I've never had a bad date, but I just want to make a memory. So there's this store. It was at Pentagon City Mall. Mm-hmm. There's a store on the 3rd floor. I think it's like a money laundering scheme because no one ever goes into this damn store. So I'm like, how do you guys even get business? But it's a hot sauce store. So they only carry like super fucking hot sauces. So me naturally, I'm like, hey, let's go in there. Talk to the guy up front. I'm like, hey, can we sample your hottest sauce? He's like, sure, but you got to sign a waiver. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, what are we doing?
Wow.
And so we, he put like the super fucking hot sauce. Who knows what it was called? Like nuclear explosion, death. I don't know. Okay. But they put a little dab on the spoons. Cheers. And yeah, we cried together for like maybe 15 minutes. She almost got like had to run to the bathroom because she said she was feeling a bit queasy and I felt terrible. But we got some ice cream afterwards. And yeah, that was really fun. Like,
that was super memorable. I can see that. That's super memorable. You cried for 15 minutes. Do you like spicy food?
Not even. I think mouthwash is spicy. Like, I'm really not into it. But for some reason, I put myself through it.
Okay. So name something that you want to do that you haven't done yet.
Go to outer space, for sure. That's number one on my bucket list, which I think later in my life, it'll be a bit more accessible. So yeah, for sure, got to do that. I guess something a bit more practical. I would love to go skydiving by myself. I took a class in college that they were literally teaching you to do it by yourself. Obviously, you'd have instructors like around you while you're skydiving, mm-hmm. you know, like hand signals if you forget. But I would love to do that by myself. I would have done it, but I was broke at the time. It was like $250. And I was like, oof.
So I'm gonna skydiver eat.
I would love to go on a date with an older woman as well.
How old? How much older?
Like,
I could probably arrange it. That's why I'm asking.
Oh,
I have single friends. They're all old. Old like your mom old or old like 30s old?
So that is like such a weird thing. Like, yeah, I wouldn't mind going on a date with a woman that's like in her 40s. But at the same time, my mom is 40. So it's like, is that like weird? But yeah. I don't feel like older women just like have experienced more life. You know what I mean? And are a bit more like mature. And yeah, maturity is attractive. So.
Facts. We'll talk offline about that. I know single women.
I promise.
Yeah, so I would definitely want to go skydiving too. My husband is not a fan of heights, so I know I'd be doing it by myself. But I would totally do that. When you said the thing about going to outer space, I can't remember where I heard this. It was a mother talking to her son, and he was like, you know, really smart kid. And she said something about, you know, don't you ever want to go to outer space? And he was like, Mom, we already are in outer space. Oh. And it's so crazy, right? Because we are. It doesn't feel like it, of course, because we're grounded by gravity, but we are literally like a hanging rock in the middle of outer space. But I would definitely love to go out off the rock and see. See the cosmos away from the rock. That would be amazing.
So beautiful to see the Earth from like a global view and be like, man, like we're all in this together. Like
there's only one Earth.
The next closest thing is like a billion light years away, you know, like we're not even, or like 4 light years to be honest. But also one thing that I've really wanted to do and that I'm doing, and I kind of mentioned it offline, is this trip to Central America. Like I've always wanted to just book a flight to a city in a different country and then book a flight back home from a whole different country. And that's basically what this trip is gonna be, a flight into Panama, flight out of Guatemala, 2 weeks, and like, let's see what happens.
Are you gonna, I feel like this could be like the resurgence of like your YouTube and your podcast. Are you gonna document it? Is this like a personal experience adventure, or is this something?
Of course I'd love to like share some experiences, but when I did YouTube, it wasn't like, hey guys, here's my vlog, like what we're doing today is we're gonna go to bed. No. Like I did wine reviews, so I called it college wine reviews at the time because I was in college, but I think I changed cheap wine reviews. But I just like to get a bottle of wine less than $50, review it, bring a person on to like taste test it with me, have some laughs, have a joke towards the end of the video, like just talk about something for 5 or so minutes and then just upload it. So if I did something like that in Central America, I would just, I don't know, like if I'm in San Jose, Costa Rica, I would go to like some winery or whatever, or go to a store, pick up some $5 wine and like try it there, sit in the street, record myself, upload it, like something like that. But yeah, this trip is more or less just to see if I can do it. Can I learn Spanish enough Spanish in 7 months to be competent and then figure out my way through all these countries. Can I? I think I can.
So although you don't have like an itinerary, do you have the countries you want to hit?
Yeah, for sure. Matter of fact, this weekend, I narrowed down my itinerary a bit more, but land in Panama City, stay there for 3 days. I'll be there during Halloween, take a 15-hour bus ride to San Jose, Costa Rica, visit my tutor who lives like 15 minutes outside of it, spend maybe like 2 days there, and then go to Nicaragua in Managua, which is the capital. I heard the people are just like really nice there. It's super cheap. Spend probably most of my time there, maybe like 4 or 5 days, visit the volcanoes that are there, whatever else. And then from there, I know I have to end in Guatemala City, but I don't know if I want to like spend some time in Honduras or El Salvador. Either one or the other. But yeah, this weekend, I definitely want to do some research. Like, what are the big things to hit?
Yeah.
Like, I know in Honduras, like North Honduras or South Guatemala, there's like a bunch of those like old Aztec cities. Mm. That would be sick to see. I love history. So to see something like that would be awesome. But what I have found on any trip I've taken out of the country, whether it's France, Colombia, Canada, or I'm going to Louisiana, it's not about the places that make the trip. It's the people that make the trip. So I really just want to put myself in a frame of mind where I am like willing to just talk to people. Like if a guy or gal is just like, oh, I'm going to Costa Rica too. Like you just want to catch a bus together. Fuck yeah. It. You know what I mean? And that's also why I've just been learning Spanish, because I really want to be able to talk to people there and know their story. And who knows, maybe someone invites me in for dinner and I just have like a wholesome, like El Salvadorian dinner with them, you know, just stuff like that.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I can see it. I can't. So we'll have to, I might give you till the end of the year. We'll see. But we definitely have to do like a part two, because now I got to hear about this trip and like all of the things that happened.
Yeah.
That's going to be very cool. That's going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Question for you.
Yes.
So we talked about it a little offline, how you've kind of been a mother your whole life.
Yes.
And it seems like this is a very natural thing to you. So to give you context, my mom had me at 17. She was raised in 23 foster homes.
Okay.
Cool thing. Very, very resilient woman, though. She's now a counselor for endangered youth. She's a model. She does makeup artists. She does public speaking, gets paid like pretty good. She built a school in Africa. Like she is, I'm glad that we share blood. Furthermore, I've noticed that over the past few years, she's doing things that I feel like she missed out on in her 20s, whether it's, I've seen my mom go out a bit more, you know, on like a Saturday or to a club or something like that. And I feel like it's because she had me at 17. So all she had time for was to be a mom.
Yeah.
When I was my senior year in high school, I took my mom to prom because she never had the opportunity to go. And it was like a big deal in the news for whatever reason. I didn't really think that big of it, but it kind of hit me like a few weeks ago. I was like, man, my mom really never had the opportunity to go to her senior prom. You know, she missed out on a lot of these things. Right. So for you, and maybe if you have friends that were also had kids young or were single mothers, do you feel like in some instances in your life, you're kind of playing catch up in a way? Like, do you feel like you're doing things in your life now due to the fact that you weren't able to do these things when you were young because you were being a mother?
No, only because for two reasons. One, because I had my daughter after I had gone to college. I had the span of college.
Okay.
So, you know, I partied and I did all of the college things. All the college things, I did all of those things. I did all those things. The only thing I did not do in college was smoke or drink. Because I also was of a generation who watch a lot of like Lifetime specials. And I was like, listen, if someone's going to try and rape me, I want to make sure that I have my faculties so I can fight. So, but what I did do is made everybody think I was drunk most of the time. Like I was known as the chick like, yo, what is she on? But it's because I like inhibitions were not a thing for me. So I didn't need any kind of stimulant or, you know, anything to change. Like I could just go there. You want to go there? Let's go. And so people probably thought I was drunk most of my college career when I hung out, but I wasn't. And then when I had Hannah at 22 and I was finished school, I came home directly with my mom. And I waited till she was about 3 or 4 before I started hanging out. But when I tell you, I was like, listen, I'm young and my mom is home. Mom, I'm going out. I would leave my daughter with my mother and I would like hang out in the streets. Like I also still make questionable decisions in my 20s. I just never brought those decisions home. Right. So I still did the very young, stupid, bad mistake, one night standish stuff. I just did it outside the home while my mother was watching my child. And then by my early 30s, I was like, all right, I'm good. I feel like I've done it.
That's your system.
I've done enough. Yeah. You know, I've thrown up in a club bathroom. I'm good.
Good segue. What's your opinion on recreational drug use?
So I feel like the way we have approached drugs in America has been to criminalize minorities. And so I hate it for that reason, because again, and I'm a justice professional, so I am in the system that criminalizes substance use for minorities, and in the same way that they don't do it for their white counterparts. And so probably if you asked me this question, maybe 5-6 years ago, my answer would be different, but I am of a place now where as long as you're being safe and you're not like actively destroying brain cells that you're going to need to use to like learn how to like brush your teeth or drive a car, like I'm okay if you're okay. If it's not harmful, if you're not doing it for reasons that you're trying to escape trauma or pain or something, then I'm okay. The only thing that ever bothers me about substance use is that people do it to mask stuff or to escape stuff. And so it's not healthy. And they do that with alcohol as well, right? Some people do it with food, some people do it with shopping. So it's really just about making sure that whatever it is that we are ingesting or doing with our lives, that we're not doing it to try and not deal with our own stuff, because we all have stuff. And this is me putting on my, because you know, I work in mental health and substance use. So putting on my fake counselor hat, you just want to make sure that you're dealing with your stuff. And you bring
point with people using drugs to soft over their problems, or they're kind of living under a cloud. I think a lot of people in my generation suffer from anxiety or depression. Whether it is really that is a whole nother discussion. There's a lot of factors for that, but I think a big reason, especially for like college students, is that they're using a drug a lot, or they're drinking a lot, or they're smoking weed a lot, or maybe they're doing cocaine, or they're doing acid or shrooms. I think, and the Bible talks about this a lot, to make accurate decisions for your future and your life, you have to be sober-minded. I think that is a huge thing. I feel like a lot of people who are struggling with the drug use, you know, I mean, obviously like addiction is a real thing, but I think for a lot of people, if you have a substance and you do abstain from that, you will get a more clear image. You'll be more clear-minded. You'll be able to make more rational decisions. And I say this off of experience. For example, in college, when I got into college, Mama J, I was so pure. I had kissed. I had one girl. I ain't never drank anything, never smoked any gas, didn't have any tattoos. I was so pure. But when I got into college, man, that first year, everything changed. I've never been much of a big drinker, but my thing of use was marijuana. And I had started using it so long that I feel like it was a part of my identity. And I had noticed that I would get more social anxiety or have feelings of depression And it's like, I didn't know why. But after I stopped smoking weed, I was like, man, the weed was like kind of like a big part of that, because I was never sober minded. I was always thinking under the veil of substance.
Right.
So I think for me personally, I think it would help a lot of people is just to, especially young people, is to go like 3 months without doing anything. Like I'm happy because this year I taught myself how to go out without drinking. Again, I've been much of a big drinker, but I also didn't like the fact that I was just kind of following the crowd. And it's like I couldn't have a great time without drinking. And I hated that. I was like, man, let me teach myself how to go out and just have a good time. Just be there, be in the moment without having a little something extra, you know?
That's real. That is very real. And I think people, we're still learning that, like at any age like that. I don't think that is something that you all of a sudden find and you don't ever have to deal with that again. Like, I think at every stage, you're still like, should I be doing this? Is this really, what are my motivations behind why I'm doing this thing or that? What, yeah. I mean, it could be, again, a lot of things, right? But if it's, you know, drinking or, you know, drug use, whatever, it is really just like checking oneself. I do a lot of, why am I doing this? Like, check yourself. Why am I doing this? Or why am I reacting like this? Like, what am I feeling on the inside? What am I saying to myself to make me feel this way?
Yeah.
And it is super important, I think, especially for today, because so I don't listen to the news a whole lot because I am like a super empathetic person, and I cry super easy. Like, if you were telling a story and you started crying, I would start crying because I would understand the emotion for which you are expressing, and I would be like, yeah, that is really deep. So I'm that person. So I don't watch a lot of news because I would probably need a lot more therapy than I already get, and I am in therapy, but I would probably need a lot more. But it is important to like know yourself and to know the kind of person you are and to know what works for you and what doesn't, because that looks different for everybody. Like, my mom could watch the news all day and be fine. If I watch the news all day, I'm like, I want to crawl in my bed and hide for like 3 days because I'm super depressed. And there are a whole group of people that I want to help that I can't, that I don't, you know, like, what am I going to do? I can't help these, you know, kids locked in cages. I can't do it. So, you know what I mean? So, you know, I try not to feed myself with things that I know, like, I can't handle. Mm-hmm. When you go on this trip, are we going to be partaking in stuff? Like,
probably not. Maybe like a little bit of alcohol if I'm out with some friends. But I think especially I think when you travel abroad, like, the customs and culture are so different.
Yeah.
In Latin America, like, you have to be very crazy. For example, I've had experience. Now, I was in a city called Cartagena in Colombia, right on the coast. Only place in the world I've ever gotten sunburned. I thought I was black enough. Guess.
Been there.
Yeah, my light skin ass got but I was out one night. I went out with some friends that were at my hostel. We were staying on a beach, basically. We were like 5 miles out the city. We take a taxi into the city, and we go to like the party part, and it was basically all just foreigners. Like, the bars, you literally had to show an international passport to get in. I met this girl, which is how most of my stories start. Mm-hmm. And I forgot her name, but she was German, but of like Moroccan descent. Mm-hmm. So bad, so bad. Like, crazy. and she had a friend that was from New York, matter of fact, this black girl. And they were like, can you get some weed? And I was like, yeah, like, I think so. I asked the small Hispanic dude, he didn't really like speak any English. So I asked with the little Spanish I knew. I was like, marijuana, 2 grams? He's like, yeah, si. 5 minutes later, he leaves. 5 minutes later, he comes back. It's like 20,000 pesos for like 2 grams, which I think is, I don't know, like $15. Gave him the money. got a wrap, rolled it up. And a few minutes later, it was so spooky. A few minutes later, like, he comes back and he's like, hey, this guy wants to talk to you. So I go talk to him. And all of a sudden, like, eight guys, like, kind of come around me. And they're like, yo, like, that's our weed. Like, you need to give us, like, 150,000 pesos. And I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, I gave him the money. Like, he told me the price. I gave him the money. They started pushing me. And they're like, no, like, we need the money or you got to go to the ATM. And I was like, fuck this. So because the bars were for international people only, I just went into the bar. I went in at like 11 a.m. I stayed there with my friends till like 3 a.m. I was like, I was spooked at that point. But I was like, you know, so much time has passed, I'm fine. So all of us leave at like 3. I walk out. I turn to my left. And like 3 of these guys are still there. And they immediately look at me like, oh, where, like, where you been? And I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, oh, no. Thank the Lord. There was a taxi right there. I go up to the taxi driver. I don't even care how much he's asking for. I give him money. I tell everyone to get into the car and we leave. And that whole drive home, I'm in the front seat by myself, spooked, not saying a word, like pale, just looking in the rear view, like, gosh, is someone following us? Cause it's Latin America. Like, I don't know what they're about. So yeah, after that, I was like, you know what? When you're in a different country, if you're not in like Amsterdam or something where it's legal.
Right.
You don't ask nothing, like, will not put myself in a situation where I could fall victim to my own ignorance. So on this trip, again, this is just about practicing my Spanish, seeing cool places, meeting cool people. I'll drink a little beer or liquor if I'm in a group of people, but I'm not doing anything crazy by myself or asking for, like,
stuff from random dudes.
Yeah. Oh, no. But it sounds like so obvious, like, don't ask drugs from random people. But like, I mean, I was like 22. I mean, I was like 21 at the time. So it's like, man, I feel invincible. You know what I mean? But
until
you aren't, you know. But that was an awesome trip too. So
that's very cool. I definitely want to travel more. We were talking earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We said it on, you know, it's so funny. I'm trying to, like, did we say this before the podcast or on the podcast? But we were talking about balance and we were talking about how you shouldn't, you know, work to work, but work to, like, live and to experience, yeah, life. And I feel like I am now just getting to that point. You know, we're talking about all this self-examination. I was definitely one of those people who I could work all year and maybe take one vacation that was like a week long, but then I'm working the rest of the year. And may take off, you know, 2 or 3 days around, like, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, but not ever, like, traveling like I want to. Like, I want to experience all of the continents, and I'm a foodie, so I want to go to all of the good food places.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere where there's food, animals, and, like, old culture, those are, like, my top 3 reasons and places I want to go. And then, you know, when I started watching also, you can see I watch a lot of Netflix. Amazing Vacation Rentals is a show on Netflix, and they, each episode has an economic stay, a unique stay, and a luxury stay. And so there are two women and a man, and so each of them, you know, pick, like, I'm going to do the luxury stay, I'm going to do the unique stay, I'm going to do the economic stay. The first episode on the first season was Bali. And the economic stay was like, I could so do this. I don't know if my husband can do it, but I could so do this because, again, I'm a nature person. So they stayed on, like, this person's really large, I feel like it was a rice farm, but they had huts that you had to, like, climb up into that looked like almost like giant bird nests. I was like,
yeah,
yes, that's definitely. And it cost like $16 a day. I was like, yep. Wow. That's my speed right there. So if you want to watch Amazing Vacation Rentals for ideas on places to stay, because I even when I was watching it, I, like, went and found the resort, like, oh, this is a real thing. And it's still, like, this amazingly cheap. So that has definitely given me ideas about places I want to go. And, like, I want to go everywhere.
I made a bet with my buddy in high school, one of my best friends. He was my co-host on the podcast I used to do. But we made a bet. I was like, hey, if I don't visit 100 countries by the time I'm 45, I'll give you $10,000.
What?
Yeah. And so I got a lot of work to do. After this trip, I think I'll be at 9, which is not a lot, but you know, I'm going to hit it. I'm definitely going to hit it. I think after this, maybe next year, my buddy, the friend I'm talking about, he's going to go master's in Germany because he's German. He's like mixed race. So I'm like, dude, I'll come out and visit you in Germany. I got friends in Berlin. So I think that would be fun. And I really want to go to Madagascar one day.
Animals. Yeah.
Well, nature, but also people. So interesting. It's not what you would think when you think of Africa. Like, they are French speaking, but they look like they're from Southeast Asia, like Indonesian. It's a really, because thousands of years ago, people from like Southeast Asia somehow got on a boat. I don't know how they missed like all these other places, but they got on a boat from Southeast Asia and basically migrated to Madagascar and settled there. And then through colonization, they started speaking French. So I think that is just such an interesting like mix of old culture, new culture in Africa. Like what?
Yeah.
That's a place I'd love to go to.
Yeah, that sounds very cool. Very, very cool. I think for Hannah's graduation next year, which I need to start planning, wants to go, of course, to South Korea. Of course. Mm. All things Korean. So
you're ready. Band.
Yeah.
So random question for you.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite president? And if you could bring a former president back now to like run for president, who would it be?
Oh God. Sweet Jesus. So it's hard to say because so many of our history of presidents is just through books. So you don't really know them as people or character. Like, I feel like I'm really good at like reading people, but because I don't get to like see them and be like, okay, are you a good egg or bad egg? I feel like that just, you know, I don't have enough of a lexicon to be able to make a really informed decision. Of course, the ones that I got to see while I was alive. And this is gonna sound very Black to me, but I'm gonna say Barack only because I don't even know if he would win in this time because we're in a very different like headspace. But what I believe about him as a human being is that he cares about human beings. And so I can vote for people who are outside my party or who have different, you know, views as me, if I feel like you care about human beings. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, like the political discourse and how politics are today is not about people, it's about issues. And so I don't care what your position is on issues, is this how it affects like people. Like if you're like, you know, policies and things that you're doing, like how can you justify that if it's like actively harming people? Then that doesn't make sense to me. And so I would pick Barack only because I believe he cares about like humanity. I feel like, you know, Biden, bless his very old heart. I believe he also cares about humanity, but he's just so old.
Yeah, that he got dementia.
He's so old. And then the talk of him like running again, I'm like, I don't think you should do that. I don't think that's very good. I believe you care and God bless you for stepping in and carrying the mantle, but
yeah, thanks for being the guy to get rid of Trump, but
right, but
it's not going good. No.
Please don't do that again. Please. We can't take.
I agree though. I mean, obviously Barack is my favorite. Like when he became president, when he got elected in 07, I think I was in fifth grade. So for me, he was like my first president, really. I mean, obviously there, but at that point in my life, like what is a George Bush? Like, I don't know. You know, Barack was like my president for all of middle school and all of high school. So there's like so much influence he has And he's just like an inspiration, you know.
Absolutely. Like,
do anything. But in terms of like my favorite president other than Barack, I'd say FDR, Roosevelt, just because like he was our president during World War II, like such a turbulent time. And he was president for, I think it was over 12 years. So it's like, man, he was there for a while. And I feel like that's super unique in terms of bringing back a past president for now. I would love to see how Jimmy Carter would do. I think Jimmy Carter was like super ahead of his time. He's the guy that implemented things like Habitat for Humanity. You know, a lot of these social programs, like such a sweet guy. So I think he would.
It's about humans. He does.
Yeah, exactly. He deeply cares about humans, and you can see it in his policies. So I think he would be a really good fit now. In terms of the election coming up, God, I think we're so fucked.
Because who could, you know, I feel like I'm one of those people who's like, listen, if it goes too far left, like I'm moving to Canada. Like I actively believe, and I don't think people want to face it, but you know, we are a very young country. And as legit as we try and make ourselves seem, we are very young. So we are not outside the realm of like democracy falling. And I don't think it is as secure as people think it is. I'm like, we are not that far from, you know, one policy or something going real far left, and we find ourselves in a Handmaid's Tale. Like, I am prayerful that we don't, but I would not be surprised if we do. And I think it's kind of arrogant for people to act like the democracy of America can't fall, because it can. It can.
Yeah, we as a nation need to be very, I think, okay, to preface, I totally understand and acknowledge that we've done a lot of fucked up stuff in our history, especially as Black people. I mean, whether it's destroying that town that was like in Oklahoma City, like 100 years ago, giving Black people syphilis, all that. I get that for sure. But America is truly one of a kind. There is not only no other nation in the world like us, but there hasn't been in history. And I think we really need to appreciate what we do have. I know like a lot of people say like, we need to have more trans rights and more gay rights. Yes, of course, right? We need to be more inclusive for everyone. But there ain't a lot of other countries in the world where like you can actually be gay and not be killed, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's not like it's China where there's literally millions of Uyghurs in concentration camps being, I think euthanized is the right word, where they basically are stopping them from being able to reproduce. Like, what we have right now in America is like so precious. And we have to give ourselves a bit of credit on how far we've come and the things that we are doing, because we are really trailblazing like a real democracy. Like, again, we have never seen this in history. We're the only country like this currently. You go to these other countries, it's homogenous. Like, you go to Sweden, it's 99% white. You go to China, 90% like Han people. You go to like Ghana, it's mostly like African people. Africa's a bit different because there's a lot of like different cultural
tribals and
But like in America, like you can literally see like an Asian dude, then an Indian guy, and then a girl from Ohio, and then all this and all that. While I don't think that we are necessarily the melting pot, which we like to call ourselves, I think we're more of a salad bowl, just a bunch of parts mixed in together. I really do love this country, despite all of the bull crap that we do and that we're doing now. We just have to take care of what we have.
Correct.
Like, guard it, you know?
Correct. Don't take it for granted and take it seriously. Like, listen, if nothing else, I think the election of Donald Trump showed us that you can't ever sit idly by, like sit on the sidelines and be like, oh, we're going to be okay. We're just, you know, just struggling along. We'll be fine. You have to actively participate and advocate and be making decisions that will not only better your individual communities, but, you know, America as a whole. So We'll see, because this election, this next election cycle, it's going to be a doozy.
Oh, yeah. But I guess last point on like the little political thing, more people need to understand and put it into practice, including myself. This general election every 4 years only means so much. Truly, my life 4 years ago when Trump was elected and now Biden being in office, overall, it's relatively the same. What really matters are local elections, and people have got to get more invested in their community and what laws are being passed in their community. Because at the end of the day, you know, you froze there for a second. At the end of the day, states damn near have as much power. I mean, we're a federalist nation, so states have a good amount of power, like cities have a good amount of power.
Yeah, let's get it. Over population.
Yeah. Fuck the general election. Like, let's worry about the local elections, the elections for your state, that type of stuff. That absolutely huge emphasis.
Absolutely. Like, it matters who is running your state and running your counties. Like, that matters. It matters if, you know, your values are being like represented and the things that you think are important are being addressed. Because if not, then why? Then why be a part of society that you're not going to participate in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Please to God, don't fuss and cuss about it after the fact when you didn't participate.
Exactly.
Okay, so this has been super fun. I'm going to bring it to a close because I could probably talk to you for like ever. And we definitely will talk offline about the date for the older woman. Anywho, but we will definitely like get back to you after this cross-country Central American trip. Because I absolutely want to hear. I feel like it's going to be like one story that crystallizes and then like many stories underneath. We're going to see what that looks like in the coming year. So again, this has been another When Christians Speak Talk Radio Bold and Beautiful podcast with my lovely guest, Trey Potter, who has been representing for not only himself, but them Gen Z. So the takeover is complete for today. We will check back with the part two in the coming months. So Trey, thank you for participating. This was a super fun conversation. Is there anything you would like to leave with the people? Any final thoughts or words for the people?
Just keep being your authentic self. Yeah.
Being your authentic self. So that's it. From one Gen Z's lips to your ears. All right, guys. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to our broadcast. We look forward to introducing young talent and sharing exciting stories with our listeners around the world. So if you have a gift, talent, story, or information to share with us, spoken word, poetry, book, or song to share, if you're an entrepreneur or musician, please contact us at bnbwcstr2016@gmail.com. or on any of our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.